Gang, we all know that a premium Spotify subscription gives you access to millions of songs and thousands of podcasts, but did you know that a premium Spotify subscription also gets you access to tons of audiobooks for free? It does, gang. Listen to great books like Storyteller, the Dave Grohl memoir, or Life by Keith Richards, or The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. Listen, there's all kinds of books on there. There's fiction, nonfiction, self-help, anything you're looking for, man, they got it, and you can listen to it for free. Just go to Spotify.com or download Spotify from your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts, and now audiobooks available with your premium subscription. Spotify.com. Let's get down. What are they saying on How Did I Get Here?
I can fit in anywhere. I mean, really, I feel like if there's people in front of me, they're going to like it.
You know, like, why am I here? What is my purpose?
But yes, we have long hair. Yes, yeah. We smoke pot. But we love this music.
The thing was, it was the song.
I do say that.
You do?
Yeah.
With that attitude?
Yeah.
The minute things get uncomfortable, if I can walk away, I will.
Now the most important thing to me are my friendships that I've made. And continue to make in this business.
It's just you feel so small and insignificant.
What do we define as a professional musician?
I could just be playing Tibetan bowls with like random chanting lyrics.
I think some switch had been flipped in me at that point where it was like I was never going back.
A naughty nurse. I had Dominique the Dominatrix. You know, these characters made me a lot of money.
Oh, I'm standing up in front of a room full of people demanding that they pay attention to me. Like, if I deconstruct this away from music, it's kind of a weird thing to do, to stand up and be like, hey, everybody, just shut up and listen to what I have to say.
Yeah. That's How Did I Get Here with me, Johnny Gowdy. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get down. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a really good weekend, gang. I was out of town, headed up to Dallas on Friday to play a show with Skyrocket at the Granada Theater. It was such a great time, man. I love that place. Anyone ever been to the Granada Theater up there in Dallas? Fantastic venue. Great hospitality, great sound, great lights, great people working there, just great vibe all around, great food. You order great food from next door. They get you dinner. I had this amazing like quinoa salad with chicken on it. It's fantastic. Fantastic. Show was great. Tons of friends and family showed up. A bunch of my cousins showed up. A bunch of my old friends, Chris Mahart from my first band. And he brought his kids and stuff. And they were just running around the Granada having a great time. It was awesome. It was awesome. We played a great show. I will say we threw down. Then the next day we drove to Houston, which is a pretty long drive. It's a little over 4 hours if you don't do that drive from Dallas to Houston. And we loaded in, we sound checked for the JDRF Gala fundraiser, which is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, for their big fundraiser. And we loaded in and sound checked, and then we had like 5 hours between sound check and the gig. And that one is a little tough to negotiate because you want to be rested. But you don't want to let your energy dip below a certain level because then you'll just want to kind of like lay down. You know what I mean? You know, it gets to be like, ooh, you know, we didn't start until 10. So anyway, we played the show. It was really good. It was a great show. Like it was a great Skyrocket show and people loved it and they danced. You could see that everyone was having to work a little bit harder to keep their focus though. You really could. It was a little bit more like, oh man, all right, what do we do? Okay, this is a long ass show. And the funny thing was they had an auction and all this stuff. They ended up raising over $2.5 million, which is really amazing. But they have an auction and all that stuff. Sometimes that stuff runs late. So it ran super late and it eliminated our break. That's what I meant to tell you. So we had to play this full like two sets back to back as one show when we're all really tired from the, you know what I mean? From the night before and traveling and then the 5.5 hour break trying to like keep our energy together to get on stage. And by the time we got on stage, it was just like, oh, wow, this is a long show, man. Oh, man. But anyway, we pulled it off. People loved it. They were fucking freaking out at the end, as they normally are. And everybody had a good time. Sunday, it took me a while to get my shit together and come back. I'll tell you that. It did. I was feeling low energy on Sunday. I was wiped out. But anyway, it was a great weekend. I'm glad we were able to be a part of that JDR fundraiser, man. Raising $2.5 million for diabetes was fantastic. Oh, and gang, I do want to remind you that Skyrocket is playing in Austin this Friday, April 19th at 310 ACL Live. You can find it. You can get tickets at skyrockettheband.com. Go there. There's a link to tickets and our tour dates, or go to 310austin.com. And that's the number 3 and spelled out 10, T-E-N, austin.com. All right. Get tickets. It's going to be a great time. It's always a great time. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Yes. Call Me Spinster from Tennessee returns to the show today. Call Me Spinster is a sister group made up of Amelia Graber Jacobs, Rachel Graber 14, and Rosalie Graber, also known as Rosie, just like my dog. Well, they have a brand new record, their debut full-length record that came out last Friday. It's called Potholes. Fantastic fucking record. It's gorgeous. Go to spinsterband.com to get involved with them. They're also going to be on tour this weekend. On the 20th, they'll be playing a house show in Sewanee, Tennessee. Next weekend, they'll be at a music festival in Athens and a music festival in Atlanta. They're going to be going all through Mississippi and Alabama, heading up to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Chicago, doing all this stuff. So go to callmespinster.com. I had these guys on a few years ago. For episode 1014 on January 29th, 2021, if you want to go back and listen to that. And that was when they put out their self-titled EP, their debut EP. They put it out in 2020. And anyway, we have a fantastic conversation. They're super entertaining women. They are very, very cool. They're very in touch with who they are as human beings, as moms, as wives, as sisters, as family, as musicians, and they're fantastic, man. They have a bunch of great videos for songs. In this, there's a great "Married in My Mind." That song and video are fantastic. "Burn the Boxes," great single and video. "Sincerely," great single and video. "Feet Are Dirty," which was the first one, a great video for that song too. We have a really great conversation about their family work ethic together, about making this record in Athens, Georgia, and just about like where they're at now. I really, really like Amelia, Rachel, and Rosie a lot. They're fantastic people, and when I found out they were eligible to come back on the show, I jumped at the chance. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the Graber sisters, Amelia, Rachel, and Rosie. They're called Call Me Spinster. Let's get down. Doing good, man. I was just looking. It's been a little over 3 years since last I saw you. And then I've been watching these videos, and there are a lot of children now. It's like a little army in Chattanooga.
Yeah, it's in the water, baby. Fertile water.
Yeah? Is that what it is? It's the water? Do what?
So that's what we blame it on, I guess. But no, yeah, we did want them.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they're this video for Feet Are Dirty, like they're everywhere. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. I guess that your family is like your family band is really a family band.
Yeah, they're all shoved downstairs right now with a cousin. So yeah, we were always trying to practice around them, and Bluey factors in a good amount for babysitting. I don't know. We're just it's a pretty constant.
It's a process of finding places to stash them. But it's also kind of what brought us together. Amelia was pregnant, and that was kind of she was the first one to go, and that was kind of what brought Rosie and I to Chattanooga, and then the band kind of came with it. So,
right. So, Rosie, I can call you Rosie?
Yeah.
Okay. I since you guys were last on the show, I got a dog and her name is Rosie.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Wait, is it a wiener dog? It feels so
wiener. Anyway. Well, congratulations on all of that. And also, man, congratulations on this new album. I've been listening to it all morning. It's so beautiful. And it actually, like, it's funny because there's a single you guys had released, that song Sincerely, a couple years ago. But then, like, you run the gamut kind of stylistically and sonically at this point to where that Feet Are Dirty song is like this synth pop song. Do you guys... you don't put any parameters on yourself at all, right? When you're recording?
We figure that we have our, we can't get away from our voices and the instruments that we play. That's so, you know, might as well do what we want to do. And, you know, we're getting a little bit more plugged in every year, you know, so it's been fun.
Well, you mean like kind of like leaving behind the mandolins and grabbing some drum machines?
Well, we still have them. We still play. We still, you know, come up with a good folk song every now and then. I think we're kind of leaning more into stuff we actually listen to. And
we don't listen to a lot of folk music. Anyway. I mean, we grew up with a lot in a big folk household and jazz and classical and other things, but I don't think we listen to more pop music now, I'd say. I mean, it varies, but I think it's getting exciting to get closer and closer to things that we would actually choose to listen to. But we were just practicing for our release show, which is coming up in a few weeks. And there's some banjo, there's some kalimba, there's... I don't know, just upright and electric bass. There's some synth. There's, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, we're just still playing. And, I mean, we're at such an early phase that I think, it feels like throwing the kitchen sink at it feels like the right move. And we'll maybe settle into different grooves. But I think, we're still at a pretty early playing phase. And learning the instruments and, you know, but I think we all like artists also that change a lot throughout the years, and you can follow through their different epics and...
Right, right. And if there is like a through line, Rosie, it's it earlier, definitely like your voices, like, you know, are the thing that is the thing that, like, the through line through the whole album, you know what I mean? Sorry, I was like looking for words. You're all staring at me and you're somewhere I know. It's like six of the bluest eyes. It's like six huskies staring you down. But no, I when you're like the guy that did your EP, Drew Vandenberg, you worked with him again, right? When you bring these songs, like, let's take for instance like Feet Are Dirty, like did you write that song differently than you did other songs? Like, did you use a synthesizer and drum machine while writing that?
No, not originally, but we had it in our minds. I think we
always knew that was
we didn't even have a synthesizer at that point, but I think we were imagining it with sort of an arpeggiator and like a sort of Robin sort of vibe. And so we play, I mean, the earliest versions of it, we played on like a droned accordion, a cajon, and an upright bass.
but it was like, you know, we were trying to like pretend like we had a synth bass. And so
actually, we had recorded that like with our awesome neighbors, Summer Dregs, just super convenient, but we had recorded this with him a long time ago, and I had recorded it on upright bass, and we were like, what is that? What is that sound? And you could actually hear like my fingers like noise against the fret on it, and it sounded awful. And so they were like, I think we got to switch to electric bass, and that was one of the things.
And then we didn't even use
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we used a synth bass.
But we have been incorporating, I think part of the fun of the recording process is we can pull in extra members that we don't necessarily perform with. And so even the version we play live right now is not quite what you hear on the record. It's definitely a little synthier than cajon and accordion, but I think that's been another limitation that we've debated is, you know, do we want the live version to be able to sound pretty similar to the recording? And I think we've come around to like, no, let's make the recording process, let's lean into the playground that is, and then make the live show what we can handle as a threesome or a foursome or sometimes a fivesome. And that'll probably continue to fluctuate too, you know. We'd love to perform with horn someday and, you know, really ham it up, but big, but be able to, yeah, get big and get small and acoustic for certain things. So.
Yeah. So when you guys play live, like when you do your release show, your, Rachel, your, is it your husband that plays guitar with you guys? And he's in the video for Burn the Boxes?
Yep.
Okay. What's that?
We let him in front of the camera just a little bit. He's always trying to quit the band, so we don't want to put too much of him in our brand. He's not reliable. And he's very lonely, so he kind of hogs the screen, you know.
So you have him and then who else would you, is there anyone else that would be on stage with you guys, or would it be like Rachel, you on drums, Rosie, you on bass, and then Amelia, you play keyboards?
Yep, that's our setup lately. So we're kind of getting back to just the three or foursome right now. So I'm back on drums, but a lot of what was recorded was a good pal of ours that was playing drums with us for a while named John Hooker. So he's what you hear on the recordings, but I started to play again and sort of dust off my drum set chops and do the Phil Collins thing. So.
And then sometimes we play with another keyboardist too, but
an extra keyboardist.
Yeah, that are a little hard to hack as a foursome. We're realizing so feet. We have like a kind of, you know, stripped down version that we can do as a foursome, but an extra keyboard that can kind of serve as that, like, you know, since the arpeggiator layer helps kind of fill that out. And Constantly Dying is another one on the record that's kind of tough to play live. That's someone that almost, we call it like Bjork metal.
Right, right.
It's like expansive and, you know, noisy and a lot of vibey layers. So we can, it's hard, but it's very vocal heavy too, so it's hard to really get as big as we need to vocally and do all of the sort of key, especially keys. There's right. just a lot of key layers in there. So that helps to have another keyboardist. I think we will play with another keyboardist for our release show, but most of our shows around, we're going to tour a bit around the record with, as we can, it's a mom style tour, so it's a lot of like weekend jaunts here and there, but then we'll do a 2 week in the Midwest where we're from. So we can stash kids with grandparents up in St. Paul and then do some routes from there. So we'll get down as far as Chicago. But that will be a four BD. Just been, we're trying to stay flexible.
Yeah, no, I mean it's not easy, but also like why play Des Moines on a Monday? You know what I mean? Like that's gonna like it's interesting because
sometimes those can be the best shows. Yeah, I feel like Chattanooga is kind of like that. We're like a great Thursday night show because we're on the way to everywhere, Atlanta. Nashville, yes,
it's a good stop on a
Wednesday night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean people will always show up, but we're trying to.
Are a lot of those shows that? Sorry, I have my windows open for some reason. The choppers are flying over, baby.
Yeah, you just got through South by, didn't you?
Yep, that's what they're coming to. They're coming to coming to take the rest of it away. Yeah, I did just get through South by. I actually left town on Friday, but I did. I had like a full South by day on Thursday.
Fun.
Yeah.
Did you play it?
I didn't play this year. I have a new band, but everybody's gone, and or most of the people were gone. So it's a band. What's that?
They'll just make money on their apartments by renting them out for $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, you don't know. Like they had a guy walking around like all weekend that works at the apartments here. Someone was telling me because they were trying to, you can see people coming in like on Thursday and Friday, like people getting in with like suitcases out of an Uber in my apartment complex. And then like looking at their phone to find the directions of the apartment and stuff. Anyway, it's frowned upon. Have you guys played South by?
Yeah, this is our first year. We played three, two years. This is going to be our third year, and then we opted for doing our Midwest tour instead, and figured it would be better for us to go next year when the record's out and we have, you know, maybe a little bit more. Stuff to put, new things to put in front of people, and it's just a lot of logistics to get all of our ducks in a row to get out there and to try to play enough shows along the way to make it worth it. And it's been really fun the last few years, but so we'll be there next
year. It's an expensive endeavor when you come from somewhere else, because I don't know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people listening might know, especially if they live in Austin, because people that live here bitch about it incessantly. It's not a big payday, and you don't get paid for those shows when you're an official. Or you do. It's like like $150, $200. I don't know how much it is, but it's not enough for three people to go from Chattanooga and spend a week in Austin, right?
Right, but that's not why you go. You know,
right?
You're the people, and they bank on that. You know, that it's enough of an investment in getting in front of folks and networking with other bands. And so it is really fun in that regard.
It's great fun. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it can be a pretty pricey endeavor if you don't really hit a lot of check a lot of the boxes you wanted to when you came here.
Right. Taco budget alone is, you know.
Yeah, I know. I live here. I've got a pretty bad habit. I've got about a $40 a week habit.
That's sensible. Totally sensible, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So on your Midwest, when are you going on your Midwest tour?
May 24th is our first day. So we're going to play some shows with some friends we went to high school with. And then playing some shows that we went to college with. So it's going to be like a real reunion tour. We're an all lady fronted bands, actually, which is cool. So Lucy Michelle is the gal we're going to play with in Minnesota. She's got a bunch of cool bands. And Julia Blair in Wisconsin, who's Illinois. Mm-hmm. She's a
had some solo projects and then plays in a band called Dusk. So we're kind of hopping on their coattails. We're booking us some really great, fun Midwest things. Lots of barns and porches.
Some bars, yeah, I know. But,
In the last 3 years since I've seen you guys, and you guys have been working on new material and stuff, how hard is it as siblings, as three siblings in a band? Because I mean, there's people like the Robinson Brothers, famously hating each other. There's those guys from Creedence Clearwater Revival where the guy was dying and the other guy wouldn't even go see him, and it was all like rock and roll shit too. And then the Oasis guys. So there's three of you.
I mean, you can spread it out. So, three is kind of a magic number in that way. Rosie's Enneagram is the peacekeeper.
Okay.
So we're really hoping to pull this through. pressure.
I'm the worst peacekeeper.
But I think it's also... what we keep saying is, you know, this has brought us closer together. And as soon as it starts driving us apart, then we need to think about how we can do things differently. So we're trying, sustainability is key. We're not going for the fast game. We're going for the long game. So, a big part of it too is our parents have been so supportive. They're musicians and they are just like still pinching themselves that we came around to this music thing finally. And our partners are really supportive and subsidizing this insane idea. So I think that's helped to allow us to make some big sacrifices in our day to days that then we can put in the work, the emotional work, as well as the musical and all the other work that comes with being in a band.
But I also feel like it's almost an older model of child rearing. You know, like we spend so much of our days as a collective, and so one person's writing emails or the other two are entertaining the kids and they're making lunch or whatever. Once somebody's like trying to work out a part while the other, you know, so we have this built-in support. I think a lot of people, you know, with early years of parenting can feel very lonely and isolated. And I think this has given us a rallying point where we have an excuse to all be together a lot of our days and to share the sort of more mundane tasks of, this phase, which,
grocery shopping.
I mean, you folded my laundry the other day. I don't know. Yeah, I was doing some.
Oh, you were making posters.
I was making posters, and she folded my underwear. So, and I think that we, you know, but it has taken a lot of effort. I think we've learned. I was talking to one of my mother's sisters. Our mom is also one of three girls, and she was just sort of asking the same question, like, how on earth are you guys not fucking killing each other? And I think that we've learned a lot. It's like being in a partnership, you know, where it's a huge mirror, and you really, I think we have to, we've had to learn a lot about ourselves and trying to make space for each other's different ways of processing. And so we've, you know, there's like certain rules that we've kind of implemented when we're like in the writing process, or just to make sure that everybody's, you know, really had a chance to process and to contribute. Or I don't know, what are some other examples?
Means of communication that, a lot of stuff that, you know, we borrowed from I have a friend that's a mediator at a Quaker home, and it's like a Quaker communal living situation of like cross-generational and so different forms of communication that are sort of quick ways to kind of get on the same page. Like, yeah, what we use a lot is what number you are about any sort of decision. So if we're like, hey, do you want to do this gig? And we'll say, I'm a 5 on the gig. I want to play it. I will burn things down to make it happen that we play this gig. I'm a 4 on this gig. Like, I would like to do it, but I don't really care. I'm a 3. I can go either way. I'm a 2. I really don't want to do it, but I could be convinced, like, you can drag me along. And 1 is, I will die before I play. And then that's just how we do a lot of sort of quick hand conversations about, as you know, being in a band is so much logistics and so much, like,
and we're pretty much we have a record label that's putting out the record, so that's huge in terms of, you know, dealing with BMI, and we're not having to submit our songs constantly and do a lot of those logistics, but all of our booking, all of our, you know, everything else is us. So finding time to actually practice is challenging, but it's also, you know, it's a slow burn, and I think that's what we're buckled in for.
Yeah. You made like a number of really great videos, like the latest one is Burn the Boxes. Is that the last one that came out? That one's fucking awesome.
We pulled that up in one day from the beginning of the thought to the shooting.
Yeah.
My husband, it runs the production side of a local ad agency or like a branding agency. And he's kind of like the fifth member of the band. He's a songwriting partner on some of the songs.
Oh, awesome.
So he's not a musician. He has written songs since he was, you know, a kid. Anytime he takes a road trip, he just sings himself. And so he's a great songwriter, but has no means or interest in like putting them out into the world. So that's been fun. I feel like I'm sort of his song midwife a lot of times. the melody is sometimes ascertainable, but sometimes it's like, gee, are you thinking like, we're like, I'll play some chords and I'll try it. But that's been fun. But so we have this huge asset of a whole sound state, like a psych wall and all this equipment. And so like that was a Sunday that we just brought the whole family in for the day and just like ordered takeout and like had our so my son is 6 and very crafty, and so we were like up super early, and he was hot gluing shit in the basement at like 6:30 in the morning, and we were looking at this dollhouse that he's constantly like making little furniture and stuff for, and Dan's like, I could like put you guys in there. Like we weren't planning on making a video for all of our singles, but he's like, let's just try that today. So, and then we had a friend in town who is a production designer, essentially from New Orleans, who had the day off of a Sunday, and he's like, well, I'm not doing anything. Just let's drink some beer and make some stuff out of cardboard. You know. And we did. It's like his favorite.
When I walked in, Chad was like, cutting up the cardboard, and her 6-year-old was spray painting furiously.
Yeah. So we were trying to, like, Chad was sort of like build the structures, and then Amos and I, or like whoever was around, would paint them or like cover them with, you know, paper. Anyway, it was fun. So same with this, with Theater Dirty. That was like an afternoon of running around and. So that's been a fun element of the band. I think we have, I love that this has become kind of a weird familial art collective that's a little broader than music. And, I think as our kids grow too, that'll be interesting to see how they want to participate or not. You know, right now they're down to make stuff out of cardboard, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Man, that's so amazing. And it really, it comes like that sort of, that energy comes through even watching it on a computer screen. You know what I mean? It really does in all the videos. Although I will say the Married in My Mind video, which, by the way, is like a pretty, it's like a baby making jam, which is funny to say to you guys. But I mean, that's like and that video, who shot that? That's like a, was that shot on 16 millimeter? Or is it some kind of effect that it was shot on 16?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have a super great camera that, or no, it's a really thing.
I think, yeah. Oh, is it? Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, my husband did one of the strikes way back. He was in the lighting union in New Orleans for years, and there was some strike when everybody's off work, and he brought them all up to Tennessee where he's from, and they shot a little movie on that camera, and so we've had it around. So we've actually shot a couple of the videos on. On film, and so we did that in just a few takes, and in this house right here, actually, we shot most of the videos just in Rachel. that was a little bit of a departure, and actually, we're putting out a video in a couple of weeks, next week, that was shot in Ecuador.
Wow.
In it, but it's like a short film. It's really beautiful. So a friend of ours that we've actually worked in various capacities at that little ad agency, would do like art department, primarily like prop styling and that sort of thing. So, we've gotten to know this, director of photography that's from Ecuador that comes and works on some of their productions. And he works heavily with his wife, who's also a director and an actor, and then his daughter is like a nature photographer. And so the three of them collaborated on a sort of road trip through these beautiful national parks in Ecuador for the song Mule. It's one of the folkier songs on the record. It has some pedal steel. It's like the more one of the more sparse songs, so that'll be also very different from the cardboard frenzy, but it's really pretty.
Still a little family collective.
Yeah, their son is coloring it still.
I think it's so cool, like your label supports all of that stuff. Nobody's like, hey guys, can we just have like cardboard videos all the time or family videos, you know what I mean? Like, it's so great that you're supported on that level to explore.
Give us a lot of freedom, like, anyway. Yeah,
well, you can do it sonically, visually, anything you want. Like, here's a synth song, here's a folk song, put it out.
they've been awesome, and in fact they were the ones that they were like We had tried a different version of the Feet Are Dirty video, and they were like, it just doesn't feel like you guys. And we were like, well, what is us guys? And they were like, your mom. And we were like, oh, yeah. And then that kind of was the reality of, like, of not only not trying to hide that, I think is a significant thing in the music industry for women. It's like, I think, you know, Cardi B and like Rihanna like kind of established that, but like it was not the case even probably 5-10 years ago that like you could be a sex symbol and a mother symbol and a, you know, diva symbol, you know, all of these could happen simultaneously, and so I digress, but they were saying, you can be that. You don't have to hide that from the videos, from the way you talk about your music to your, and there's no way we could hide it from our music. So it's been like really freeing to just kind of double down on that. And that gave us a lot of direction too. We were really playing around with a lot of different imagery for the record. And so I think that helped us kind of narrow down on the visual tale we're telling with both the record cover and the we did a set up a photo with the three of us in a kitchen, and then the kids are all running around and they're blurry and we're kind of thick locked in the shot, and so yeah, and your pregnant belly, she's got her big old pregnant belly out. So yeah, I think apart from it, there is just the logistics of like who, you know, who is going to take us, like I don't know that we would be as enticing to like a booking manager who is like, okay, how many kids are we? There's four now, there's five, we're going to have five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is logistically a completely different ball game. Kids in their 20s,
it's not like it can't be done.
No, it can't be done. It's just different. The pace is going to be different ultimately, and earlier shows the better.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is that, like, really, you guys are tremendous, tremendous songwriters and creators. Like, this record's unbelievable. It's beautiful. I wish that you made more records faster. That's the only complaint I have about you guys. Honestly, like, I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. Like, you're really, really great.
Thank you. Well, we did have record more, actually, that we didn't even put on the record, so we're like, that we still need to work on. But
we have a record worth of material, I think, ready to go. So hopefully we can get there faster. Part of the reason we actually made this record well over a year ago. It's been ready to go. We just have had babies and then not being able to tour. So we were trying to actually start releasing by last South by was our original goal. But that still is going to be baby. We're sneaking this in before the next baby in July.
Oh, wait, you're going to have a baby in July?
Yeah, Rosie, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So wait, okay. So how many kids are there? Like collectively?
Four.
There's four?
Right now. So this will be the fifth in the team. Yeah.
I guess you just, when you cut it back and forth from different scenes and they're coming from different angles, it looks like so many kids everywhere.
Yeah. Mostly 12, yeah. But literally only.
Can I tell you guys something really funny? It's just totally out of the blue, but it does have to do with one of your songs. I watched this movie at my grandma's house the other night called Death Proof. Do you know this movie?
I don't think so.
It's a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Oh, you watched it with grandma?
No. No, I watched it at her house without her. She's 100 years old. Yeah, it's a real over the top kind of like revenge movie. And it came out as a double feature with this other like zombie movie that Robert Rodriguez directed. And so they put out these two movies that are kind of like hyper violent, crazy, kind of like people, you know, driving over other people's faces and tires screeching out on the face and stuff like that. But I was watching this movie and it's all these women throughout this whole movie. And let me preface this one thing. I have this friend named Julia Urban who went out with Quentin Tarantino, and she was like, you don't understand, like this dude, he loves me for my feet because she's real tall. She's actually, he's got a foot thing. And this movie is just like women's feet hanging out a car window, women's feet against a
I have seen this movie.
Yes. You know what I'm talking about?
There's a scene where the leg.
Yeah, gets cut off. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, when I first saw Feet Are Dirty, the first thing I thought was like, yeah, I know. I watched this movie the other night. Sorry for such a long setup for just that joke.
I love it. I know. That's been one of the feedback we've gotten about Feet Are Dirty. It's like, you're really sleeping on the OnlyFans.
you guys are going to get canceled by the foot fetishist.
Are any of our best at these actually.
Oh, thanks.
But also, like, that's, in all seriousness, this is like a thing that we talk about with, like, the weirdness of being in a family band is specifically not wanting, like, a sister wifey.
Yeah,
like, to sexualize that in any way, but then also still wanting to feel, like, you know, like, sexy in our own music
house
and empowered as well, but without being, like, overtly, like, fetishy. Yeah, like, a sister thing, you know? So
no, I totally understand.
I feel like we need to, like, have a sit-down with Time and, like, how do you all deal with this? We need to have a sit-down with Time for so many reasons. But that's one of the questions that would be on my interview list. Like, how do you reconcile this as sisters? But
you know what's weird? I actually interviewed Nancy Wilson from Heart. And they went through a phase where they were sexualized like that in their career in the 70s. It was like, ooh, do they or don't they? And it's like, dude, it's just gross. What are you, crazy? It's her sister.
Wow, that's funny.
But yeah, there was
they just, like, let it happen so that they, like, get, like, pressed.
They're like, all press is...
they had a real hard time. It's pretty well documented. There's like a book and everything, but they had that when they were young, and then, like, in the 80s, in their sort of resurgence, then one was overly sexualized and the other one was really overly criticized for her weight, and it just kind of turned into this weird, gross thing where then they weren't writing the songs they were playing, and, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll have to read that.
Anyway. But yeah, that's a real thing out there.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, did you watch the documentary that came out about Fanny?
No, but I've wanted to see it.
I haven't seen it either, but I wonder, I mean, they had all kinds of interesting dynamics too, I'm sure. And the Bengals had a similar kind of thing. I mean, in music.
Yeah, when in music. But the sibling thing always kind of creeps me out. I went out with a woman who has an identical twin, and they're both really beautiful. And then people are always like, hey, do you ever, and I'm like, do you ever get together with, like, your sister and get it on with someone? I mean, because that's just weird. Yeah. All right. So, did you guys do Americana Fest? Yes.
For the first time this last year.
Just this last year.
We played at 5 Points. For, I don't remember the name. Shoot, it was a great venue though. It wasn't fun, but. We've been playing with, the beauty of our label is that it's also closely associated with both Normaltown Records, which is like the Nude Party is with they're on the West. Anyway, we're sort of associated with Normaltown Records and New West Records because it's also sort of a family operation as well. So we get to hop in with some really fun artists from all of those labels. So it's cool to get to.
That is when I went to the page to listen to the label. It was, or to listen to the record. It was like New West branding on there. So mm-hmm. Congratulations. That's really great, man.
We got we connected with them, and, you know, we hadn't recorded anything. We'd been a band for like
a year or two, you know, I just started writing songs and, you know, as slow as we are right now putting things out, we would have been a lot, I think we would have been even slower. That huge boost of infrastructural, support and also just access to Chase Park and to Drew. They made that connection, and I don't think I would have been able to without that help. And that leveled us up a lot faster than me. I mean, it felt like I felt the first day of recording like I was some trust fund kid whose parents bought their way into some Ivy League school and was like, oh God, I don't understand the language that everyone is speaking right now. This is terrifying, but it, so I think it took a lot of patience from Drew, especially the first, you did have to learn so many things about recording and then how to self-record. When we finished both records here, the first time because of 2020, and then the second because we have so many vocal layers that just took a lot of just tons of overdubbing and blah blah blah.
Does one of you kind of take charge of the vocal arrangements and stuff? Is there one sort of like Brian Wilson vocal person? No.
That has actually been more and more just kind of slipping into our own parts and whatever you
I guess you would. That's one of the luxurious things of singing with your family, is that when you open your mouth, everyone kind of falls into place.
Yeah, Rosie. I would say Rosie is our
the best
ears of the band, and she's also the bass player. So I think she hears the lower part, which is hard.
It's funny because they write a lot of my bass parts for me when I'm messing around. They're like, do this. And I'm like, oh.
Well, I think it's easier. It always blows my mind to think of a band that each instrument comes up with their own parts. Because to me, it makes so much more sense that the other instrument comes up with the other parts that they're able to actually hear. So a lot of times I feel like I'll be playing drums and I'll hear Amelia's key part and I'll be like, oh, this is what the bass should be doing right now because my ears are free to hear it as opposed to when she's playing it. I don't know. It's like having that one step of removal that allows us to kind of come up with things. And I think same with them. They're always like, I always have rhythm section opinions.
Yeah,
because it's too loud and so I'm just playing and I can't hear creatively. And whereas she's like, actually it should be, this is where I want to dance, this is the beat that I'm. So we don't have the thing where we go home to our separate houses and then come back and have our parts. It's like all kind of being,
we're throwing things at the wall.
Sometimes we do that with the song structure, sometimes we're bringing something relatively base to the group, but where there's a verse and a chorus and chords structure, but sometimes
even that
we'll come with a verse or a hook and then we kind of throw it back and forth a little bit. And then some of the songs really a lot of the parts just became a lot fleshier in the studio. I'd say most these went in fairly well baked. And the guy that we were working with, the drummer, is also a multi-instrumentalist, and he is a lot more versed in recording software, and so he kind of drove for some of our demoing process, I would say. And so we had things pretty well. That was almost like a pre-recording session, and then
We got to meet with Drew before we even had a recording week. And
that's true.
And he worked, which is awesome to have that. He workshopped with us before we even went to the studio.
Oh, right. Doing some pre-production. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we worked with JoJo Glidewell, who's plays in Of Montreal and Modern Skirts, this is Athens band forever, some other cool bands, but he played keys on a lot of the songs, and I started taking lessons with him. And
oh, that's great.
So we have weekly sessions where we would do, we would use our spinster songs, and he would learn the song, and we would kind of like jam on them together, or I could like watch how he was soloing or whatever. So it was also a way to kind of like pay him in a way to like to learn our songs and to kind of have ideas flowing. So when we got into the studio, sometimes I would play a layer and sometimes he would play a layer, but he already knew them. Was a cool collaborative process. But he, you know, there were some songs like constantly dying, a lot of that layering happened. We had gotten as sort of trippy as we could in our 4 or 5 piece scenario, but then he came with all of his crazy synths and added a bunch of stuff.
Wow. Well, man, you guys did a great job. This is a fantastic record. The songs are great and the recording is fantastic. It really is. I'm missing anything else. Is there anything else I'm missing? Oh, do you guys play the Nick often?
We have our first Nick.
Yeah. Oh, it's your first show there?
Yep. And I just cold called. I saw that they had a brother band Friday night that we were going to be back from Oxford. And we were like, hey, we're a sister band. Can we play for this brother band? And they were like, we called the venue. And they were like, yeah, come play. There's this other brother band. You should hit them up. And anyway. No, I went on their Instagram.
No, we reached out to the Nick through
and didn't get anything.
Oh,
and then I went to the.
No, that's us.
Okay, well, anyway,
it doesn't matter.
And it's a brother band, and they look really sweet. They're called Hold Fast,
maybe half our age.
And we were coming through anyway because it's in Proud Larry. The night before, so
they're
like,
hey,
on the
Nick.
Do
you love the Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I love that place. I was wondering, I remember the last time that I played there was probably like 10 years ago, but there was a picture of my band from like 1993 and a bunch of other friends of mine from that era. So I just remember walking around taking pictures and sending them to friends of mine and being like, look, dude, look at your hair. Dude, you weren't wearing a shirt. Because they're all like from 1993,
94. Were you in Michigan then, or were you living in Austin?
I was living in Austin, but I toured regionally a lot. And I was in a band called Mr. Rocket Baby. I think that's the band that was on their wall there. But it's hilarious.
Keep an eye out.
I couldn't imagine that. I mean, I guess people don't really make 8x10s anymore. It's weird. You don't really need them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We're going to look for you.
Yeah, we'll look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birmingham friends, send them out. We don't know a lot of people in Birmingham.
I think I do. I think I have a cousin I think my cousin Danielle might live there. I'll tell her to go see you guys. She would probably love you guys.
Wow. That was great.
It's been great talking to you guys, and congratulations. This record drops on April 12th. There's a slew of singles out there. There's a bunch of great videos that we talked about. Oh, that song Sincerely also is really beautiful. Was that, did you guys do that like live as that was being filmed? Is that like a live? No. Okay.
Well, yeah, so we were singing.
we learned that one actually for our grandparents' 60th wedding anniversary, and our grandma just passed away on Saturday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a song that makes us think of her.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful song. Sorry about your grandma.
Right. Yeah, they're like, long run.
Well, she had good granddaughters, that's for sure. It's been great talking to you guys again, and I hope that I run into you and we get to do, I want to do this in person at some point. I'm going to definitely look and make sure if you guys are coming to South By that I make it out and see you. Because I'm sad that you were here twice and I didn't do it. What's that?
Okay, we'll buy you tacos.
Thank you. Well, great. Well, good luck with everything and congratulations. And hopefully I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Johnny.
Bye. All right, gang, that's Call Me Spinster, Amelia Rachel Rosie, the Graver Sisters, baby. Their new record, Potholes, available now wherever it is you stream and download your jams. Go to spinsterband.com, catch them out on the road in the next couple of months. They're going to be playing some festivals next weekend in Athens and Atlanta. They're playing this weekend in Sewanee, Tennessee. But they are going to Chicago, Minnesota, Wisconsin, everywhere. So, yeah, go to spinsterband.com. All right, I don't want to thank those guys for doing the show. I love talking to them. And listen, gang, when you're out there checking out spinsterband.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday, every Friday, sometimes three shows a week. Who knows, man? We are crazy over here at How Did I Get Here. All right, enjoy the rest of your week. I'll talk to you guys on Friday. And don't forget, come out and see Skyrocket Friday, April 19th, 310 ACL Live. Let's get down.
Burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn them down. Burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn the boxes, let them drown. Burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn them down. Burn the boxes, burn the boxes, burn the boxes, let them drown.
Boxes, burn the boxes, let them down.